Thank you very much. Oh, Lordy, the recorder is back. So there's things, we might have to, let's see how the talk goes. Trying to be as open and frank about the process that we just went through as a team. So there's a whole bunch of things that I may not like recorded in perpetuity, right? But Nikolai's recording, so that's so, anyways, I mean, basically, does anybody want to vote for the recording or vote for frankness? Frankness, you get it from me anyways. So this is about a data center move. This is a little bit more than just like moving the data center. There's a lot more to it that I'm going to go through. It's going to be kind of high level. I'm going to dive into the weeds and some of the technical bits and some of the other bits of the process, but trying to encompass something that has taken our team 10 months. All right, my fine team, the ops team, is all sitting in the back, including my boss. And you know, like this talk, I did a legal disclaimer. Legal disclaimer: everything I am saying is not, I am not representing my employer or any of my teammates. Okay, it's purely me talking. Anything that is successful about this is because of me and my teammates. My teammates. It's really important, this whole process, right? And anything that's totally screwed up is actually my fault. So if we get on here, I just want all of that to be clear. The presentation deck that we got here hastily created out of a bunch of other internal materials, lots of redacted, you know, things and whatnot taken out. And it's pictures, so I'm going to kind of allow this to be verbal with the whiteboard for details on things that are not clear or not up to date. So let's talk about what we were doing, where we were, right? So the startup, how many people in this room work at companies that would call themselves startups? All right, fistful. And that includes a bunch of my coworkers. Awesome, and I see. Great. So not a lot. How many people work in enterprise environments? And if you mean it, you mean it. You mean it. Okay. So how many people work somewhere in between, do you think? Yes. Okay. Good spread. Okay. So startups do things in a certain way, which means they do things the way it's just kind of made up as startups, right? This is supernatural, totally natural in the process, right? And in that process, requirements change, products are formed that nobody has ever imagined before, or they've never come into being in that way before. And there's very little planning you can do. And literally you start with a couple of boxes, you know, from a getting an internet company off the ground. You start with a couple of boxes or a couple of EC2 nodes and work your way up from there. It's all focused on the product and the application, right? One of the unfortunate realities of that is that people like myself and my fine team don't get to come in until it's a little too late, in just about every case, right? We're not a part of the product in that way. We, at this point, are very deeply involved in what we do with this company and are part of the product, et cetera. I'm not talking about like our meaning in life kind of crap. But when you're making a product, you're not thinking about, you know, how to actually engineer something. Right? It's like the difference between architects and civil engineers, right? It's a pretty clear distinction. So a lot of terrible things can happen in that process. And a lot of it is all made with rapid prototyping tools, whatever the fastest thing is to get up and going. So you end up with this scenario that I'm going to describe from what we had before. Right? This was a pre-flow current design, or design efficiencies, they're not current anymore. We had three data centers, and this talk centers on a move of one of them. This was Internet, 111 8th Avenue, Google building. Anybody knows about anything about that wonderful building?
Condos now, isn't it?
So I consider it, the Google people put rooms in you can sleep in. So it used to house most of the machines, now it houses most of the people. And Internet was one of the customers there. When I joined this fine company, they were faced with, all right, cool, so we're hiring more, hiring more for the ops team because we have this data center move coming, and it's going to be, we need to accomplish this. And when, when's the close down? September 30th, the power goes off. This was in January, right? I said, all right, this sounds great. Anybody in the room who knows me enough knows I'm crazy enough to just be like, yeah, sweet, let's do that. That's pretty stiff, considering we had, when this process started, 3 data centers that we actually represented silly here. 3 physical locations, one of them downtown, that was like the birthplace of the company. A lot of infrastructure at AWS. There's a whole story about this company once being a kind of a poster child for the cloud and the cost suddenly making that change as the way we do things. So this kind of walks through this one data center. And we start with the topology of switches. I'm just going to kind of, it's going to be real loose. We start with the topology of switches. And this is something we started to call the Hell Ring. So our teams called this. This grew out of a couple of cabinets in a pod. It had switches in them that were put together in a ring with fiber optic cable of varying SRPs. There were some that were 10 gig short range SRPs, some were long range, to get across to the 3 cabinets on the complete other side of the floor through 2 physical doors that they had to have access to, et cetera, as the company grew, right? It's kind of natural, just hack it, go, we need another cabinet, order it, who cares, blah, 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 blah. And what this turned into is a scenario where an unplanned network and a network full of features starts to mean that every one of these switches is configured totally differently. And this turns into a heterogeneous mix of switch technologies. So we have our companies, vendors, the Junipers and HPs of varying types and models, right? It starts to get really ugly really quick, spanning tree across that whole ring. Then you get into failures of switches and what happens in spanning tree. Then you get into special configuration and lots of hands. The team that built this is not the team that works here. And I never want to demonize these guys because we know exactly what pressures they were under as they built this, right? But what this turned into is something where we have all these special Snowflake configurations and some big Junipers that were doing nothing but reverse NAT. And our internet is coming in straight to our switches, and there's all this VLAN hijinks going on. And VLANs, you know, we're basically VLAN tagging all ports, most cases, except for the many, many lots of not in this case, to all of these switch ports, right? That includes internet connectivity and internet traffic. Yeah, so somebody does get big. Yeah, it's bad. And so somebody's doing ad hoc routing inside of this because, you know, naturally you start having performance problems and bottlenecks across all of our application servers and all kinds of fun. This spins out of control, and you get to a point with all these this VLAN tagging where just internet traffic as well as internal traffic is creating such a cacophonous mess on our layer 2 network that we can't see straight. Bad. And it looks like something that I think a lot of us in the room have touched before, both made up of a lot of switches. Like really we're picking up the VLAN tags on the individual hosts. Right? So this had a whole bunch of problems. Non-determinism being the biggest performance problem, right? We had no idea which way packet was traversing the ring, and based on the way the spanning tree was implemented and glued together, we had a lot of anecdotal evidence. It was very hard to use doing good engineering here. A lot of anecdotal evidence that packets from a host on the same switch would, based on the moments of the amount of throughput and every which direction it was going, would actually traverse the entire ring and back to the switch to talk to a host on the same host. Right? So we had no way to handle all of these things, and we have a lot of other winning technologies, right? Things that require low latency network connectivity, like Memcache or AMQ. Our database systems are built for MongoDB, right? And all the connectivity between all of our applications and this stuff became a pretty serious problem. So this move was a really welcome thing. It was also a big gun to the business's head and to our head, so we had to get a fight. We had other problems, okay, with that topology. And we had other problems with the way that we glued, I remember why this slide's here, the way we glued our data centers together. There were some layer 2 links that had been hacked together, and we're in a business that deals with PII, lots of them. And, you know, this guy made our legal department come talk to us, and that's wonderful, right? And that meant that this slide, a company Google's slide size, who in this room doesn't know what this slide is? so it's like, yes, sir.
No, screw you.
Screw you. The gentleman in the back, way back. No. So look, this stuff started to become a real concern for our business, right? Because we can't sustain we're this little company that nobody in here has really ever heard of before. We're not Google. We can't sustain something like this. This would put us out of business, right? And that's a worry. This is some pictures of that physical environment. Now, these cabinets are on the other side of the floor. They're awful small on the screen here, but you're seeing some tastes of the actual physical environment is really important when you're doing anything with data center, because we literally have a hard time figuring out where things work, where actual hosts, where the machines really work. Very hard time figuring out what switch they were plugged into. Where, how, when, right? And tracing cables in here was so dangerous that we would get to a point when we were doing machine audit and preparing to move, found maybe about 18 servers we didn't know we had, things like that. When we did this machine audit, we were jiggling cables and taking boxes offline by just moving cables around, right? So this was a very dangerous environment for our business, right? It was costing us a shit ton of money, really bad. And we had to move the whole thing, all right? So here comes the ops team. Hey, I just got, can I kick it? Thank you. Sorry, I am on call. Enter our ops team, and enter a different approach. Who doesn't know the OSI model in the room? Anybody? Oh, come on, you two. Guys.
With layer zero?
Layer zero is that way. The bathrooms are on the corner. So you got the physical, you get the network layer, transport layer, session layer, application layer. Hey, this is really all our company, and reinforcing everything I said. This application layer is the only thing that our company has thought about for a long time, and then again, it's a normal startup thing, right? Not thinking about all the pieces underneath us and how they affect things. So we got to break this apart, we got to do this fast, we got to clean this up. Use this slide a million times before. So my favorite design principle in breaking apart just about anything is copy other really good design principles, the things in the world that work. That's the principle, copy good things. We're a business that needed to also scale, growing really fast, blah, 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 startup, doing exactly what we should, which means we have to grow really fast, and that message you saw isn't going to sustain that. So one pattern that I love are the way that banks are designed. Banks pretty much have three big zones when they design a bank. There's the ATM lobby area, there's the work area where the tellers are, and there's the vault, all right? And from a security perspective at a bank, ATM lobby areas are not the securest areas of a bank. They're not really that secure. They're designed to mitigate the risk and contain the risk of the fact that money is exchanged very freely here. So there's things like a $500 limit, de-incentivizing somebody getting robbed, that kind of thing. Right? People get robbed at ATM lobbies all the time. Do all of those security cameras always work out there? No, maybe not. The bank work area, this thing's designed for worker safety, the whole thing. This is just like your production application servers, right? This thing, and when I say worker safety, it's not bulletproof glass, it's the teller behind the window not being distracted by the placement of where something is and somebody walking by and screwing up the count. That's worker safety, right, from that perspective. And then you get to, and more of the security cameras work here, right, but you still also have to deal with employees coming and going and all this kind of thing. Then you get to the bank vault, and that's where all the money really is. And this bank vault has very little egress, right? There is one door, or maybe two doors. And those DVR systems on all cameras, they work, right? And every dollar that goes in, it's marked. Every dollar goes out, it's marked, in principle, right? Now, I don't design banks, so somebody in the room has experience with this, I'm probably screwing it up badly, but you get the gist, right? This costs, the bank vault costs a lot of money, and it's very cumbersome to work with, to work around, right? The ATM lobby is the complete opposite, right? So in designing different layers, it's about, to me, not about securing or fashioning something that meets, this high security standard for your whole world, but breaking your world apart into pieces that you can actually manage, right? And to me, that's your front layer, internet-facing services, your application layer, your data layer, right? this to me is just like kind of a fundamental of starting the design approach. And then this starts looking like a network-ish diagram. We'll get a little less goofy in a minute. We do mail, we do web applications, we talk on the internet. We insert, in the design, we inserted a edge layer here so we can control egress in and out of our world as a starter. And we take our front HTTP and other applications, our MXs, and those touch the internet. The MXs keep moving closer and closer up to the front. The applications are in this middle space, right? And our data layer, queues, and critical management, all of these things, these are the things you button up and really spend more time and energy on containing, understanding, etc. Get the gist. So we started with routers. All right, so here's some new things, and here's where I'm going to go to the syllabus thing that I had out before. This really turns into, actually, let me just stop for a second and go this way. This is the next part of this journey. In February, and I'm ad-libbing in here, so interrupt, just ask questions. The next part of this journey starts really on the floor out in this office, and it starts with how are we going to accomplish this move? Where do we buy the things we need to buy? How are we going to pay for movers when we get moving trucks going? We're going to New Jersey with the state center. I don't have a car. How are we going to deal with this? How do we deal with all the logistics of what's going to happen in the company? Architecturally, what do we build? How do we lay this thing out so that we're positioned well for the business and for our application, right? How do we put all this together? So this starts into a journey that actually begins, it's funny, it used to be a podium in here, it's not perfect. Get a metal notebook and you start walking around and talk to every group in your company. Say, hi, we're doing this data center move. This is how I happened. Hi, we're doing this data center move. My boss is helping direction. We need food. And we think that your group does that. So legal, hey, we've got contracts coming. We need to make friends with you really early, right? We need to know who you are, you need to know who we are. Hey, finance, hey, who writes the small checks? So when we need a little thing, how does that work? How do the big checks get signed? Like, how do we get this stuff done, right? And start planting all these seeds, and the beginning is really hard because you don't get answers. Right? Everybody kind of looks at you funny and you're like, yeah, things have moved. I don't know what that is. That's awesome. Cool. Glad you joined the company. Let's go do a startup company fun thing in the kitchen. Okay. That's a serious thing. And next thing you go to is, what else? Who did I go to? Oh, yeah, people, your team. Your team. And this is my team sitting in the back. Boy, we have to get together real quick about how we're going to try and accomplish this thing together. This sounds really easy. Like, does everybody in this room like really agree with all of your coworkers? I know you two work together. I know that a number of people work. You two work together. Yeah, totally. Our database team, of course, we all work together perfectly all the time. All right, you got all of you have to suss each other out and understand each other's capabilities really fast. Because we don't really have much room for failure in this whole project. If we don't get the data center moved and the application moved sanely and kept live through the whole process before September 30th, this office doesn't run. There is no company, right? So in figuring out what's going on with the team, this turns into figuring out our technical capabilities, like what we like, first off, the way we think, where we come from, trying to get a hold of each other and show each other's some format to see each other's resumes so you can actually something, anything that shows like, oh, you've done this before. So, the best way we did that and the thing I would recommend is lots of drinking. Just drink with the team. It's going to start things going. Because you're definitely not going to all agree through all the process. And you're all going to have to trust each other and learn how and where to trust each other and where it's important for you to step off and let it go and let them do something that their way and when it's important to not, right? And our poor boss, he's looking at me, he's got this stern face where he's like, yeah, I know the realities of how that is. Really suck. Okay, so next thing, people. Okay, so we covered like the network and all these things, the servers, the money in basic ends. Oh yeah, here's one thing about startups that's real different from, say, I would say big enterprise environments. Startups work according to run rate, right? And it's typically according to some annual schedule, something very different approach to things. So capital expenditures, which we're about to have make a gigantic one with this move, kind of a bad thing for a startup, kind of a bad thing on books, kind of a bad thing everywhere, right? So getting close to finance and figuring out, getting them prepped and also getting expectations for what you're capable of actually doing very quickly at a startup, really important. Another thing about startups, you gotta get comfortable with. There may not always be set budgets. They may not know what to come back to you with, right? And that's real. That's part of the overall way that the business is born. So these are really difficult things because there's no constraints, right? This suddenly means that having engineering conversations is very difficult because you want to be enterprising and awesome. So ta-da, Juniper vendor, I was watching in. Next thing you know, we've got a lot of that, and we did. And so suddenly, yeah, I see a wincing face on that too. The scenario, you have to rationalize very quickly all of these kind of like ambiguous things that, whatever. The better the constraints, the simpler some of this decision making is, right? So anyway, so this is why I'm talking about do this stuff early. You gotta get right to all these people early and start getting a dialogue going. Vendor relations. All right, next thing at a startup that happens. So when you hit the news, they get TechCrunch and they say, this company just got $10 million in their round Series B, blah, whatever. This makes every vendor in the city reach out to you and they want to get their hooks in real fast, right? And often the vendors are counting your money faster than you guys are figuring out what you're going to do with it. It's really intense, all right? So another thing from the ops seat that makes part of this job hard is that the vendors go, it's just the common case, they want to go for the executive decision maker, right? Because at the end of the day, somebody, you know, with a title is going to have to sign the check, right? If that happens, this can actually cripple your project and actually put you out of business because, you know, the stakes are really high. You make the wrong engineering decisions, and you don't get enough of, or you get the wrong, a monstrous thing you don't need, you're not going to make it. Right. So this stuff's really important. So that means you got to wrap your arms around every vendor relationship the company has as fast as possible, which sucks. Absolutely sucks. These guys still call me at the end of the quarter, like, not, but hey, Isaac, what's going on? How are you doing? And there's a really easy way to deal with vendors. Call you when I want to buy something. They're always, no matter what, they'll always let you call them. And then let's see. All right, so the next thing, the reason that we focus here on network first, this is one of the last frontiers in open source to me that doesn't exist in open source, right? The network, right? We talk about the open compute, open networking projects, some of the stuff coming out of Facebook. Man, they're doing some great work. And that's because in our world and in other things I've done, the network costs as much as or more than the entirety of everything else we're doing. Now, we're a gray box Intel shop, right? Wait, you know this story, I guess. It really does. The network ends up becoming something that can actually cripple what you're trying to accomplish as a business from an application perspective. And unfortunately, like we're saying, everybody deals in layer 7 here, right? This is the most neglected thing nobody thinks about. Like, the network just works. What do you mean? We have to buy stuff for it? Like, that's crazy talk, you know, like, when you're thinking about your app. So suddenly, a $50,000 switch is suddenly a completely shocking thing to a lot of people in business, right? And it makes me look at my stomach churn a little bit too. So it's exciting to see open compute and all this other stuff start to get out of that world. But then again, we also had routers and edge we're trying to put in. So we went with and started with PFSense. I talked about that before and done stuff with it. We also have 10 gigabit network requirements for what we're doing as a starter. And PFSense, when we started this, they're not quite in that space. So what we tried to do was test it, right? And just get stuff in the office, lab it out as quick as possible. So some of the biggest boxes we got cost like 10 grand, have a ton of throughput possibility, right? They work wonderfully with FreeBSD. Marvelous, in fact. FreeBSD 8.2, which is PFSense's kind of phase right now for release. You're not going to push. You're not going to push your wire speed 10 gigabit links with that. You're just not. We pushed it in the office to within levels we thought were acceptable, and really at the end of the day, we had no other choice but to just start going. By the time we even got to have the real conversations about can we do this, should we buy or change, Juniper again as the incumbent, it was really too late, and we're already in the implementation phase. This ended up, I'm just going to focus on this real quick and we can circle back at the end. This ended up being very, very difficult and expensive choice in a different respect. We are wrestling this week, and part of the ad hocness of this and my disappearance in the last months, have been wrestling with our network egress and PSS and almost every box 10 gigabit network, right? It has a pretty serious cost.
Which driver do you go with the 10 gig?
So we started with IX, Intel's IX cards. They were pretty great. We had an opportunity based on a design problem that happened in the summertime, design problem might I forget to admit, where we basically gave us a minute where we had 10 gigabit links on the internet that we weren't using, and we could test the hell out of our fixed scenario, right? Now testing, how many people have done testing with 10 gigabit links? Like, yay, we're going to send a lot of mail, we're going to do all this web. Right, yeah. So how many people did this 10, 15 years ago with gigabit links, 12 years ago? Yeah, right, remember how that was? Remember how much fun that was? Oh my God, a gigabit of network connectivity to the internet? How many people test that? It's crazy. Yeah, it feels exactly the same. It's just as shitty. Absolutely. No. You know, the MTU sizes are still 1500 bucks, so no, it's not. So here, you know, here we go sliding into this space, and what we're wrestling with right now is we tested to our best ability. We spun a shit ton of AWS nodes and used all of the other infrastructure or other facilities, whatever we had, to test number of socket connections and states that we hold in PFSense, failover between our card and PFSense boxes, all these things. Overall, thoroughly, wow, really hard one to test, right? Even working with the fine data center and being like, hey, do you have anything we can saturate our links with? And they're like, what? Yeah, really, really hard to test this. We tested it up to some pretty great tolerances to the best of our ability, and we're still right now getting throughput that's crushing our primary PFSense box. I'm going to be in Jersey tomorrow working on it. So. With PFSense, some of the details, Chelsea cards. CXGB, I think, is the card we've got. We have one of those in office. I've been dying to play with for like 2 months. That'll let us do all Q and much other things we desperately need right now so we can control the insanity of what's slamming our edge in and out. We can't do that for the IX and previously 10 we can. So I'm going to say, I guess GNM is hired to do some work for the BSS guys to backport the driver for the Chelsea cards to 8 for them for this use. PFSense only gives it out if you buy hardware from them. We just did that. We just found that out in the 11th hour or two as we're like, yeah. So it's a little bit messy right now, like going open with this end of the layer. And I will say now, in retrospect, and while we're living with it now and feeling the pain of it, it's got a cost, right? So, but then we turn around and we look at. Not only we've been looking recently at commercial offerings, not just for ourselves and our sanity, but for our quest. Well, can't we just buy something? And the equivalent in Juniper space to what we've got and what we need to do, if we do it all correctly and have all the throughput we need, about for 3 boxes we're going to be spending about $760,000. That's insane. So. You know, on these guys cost just under 11 each, right? So three of those, they're three, pretty big difference.
What are those?
These are super micros that we got from IX Systems. They were a tremendous help with the 10 gig kit, especially the boards and all the backplane stuff. Super micros, 24s, we jammed out the cores to deal with context switches, which worked pretty well. Keep context switching to within some tolerance of those packets. No, they're like these are two U boxes. Yeah. And the let me see. The rest of the spec there, we're looking at also the Fortinets, right? And in there we're looking at 280. What we're trying to do. So
those are FreeBSD routers running 10?
At the moment we're running PSS. We're having discussions as a team as to whether or not we think we're going to be safe enough as we carry into our busy winter season to actually start exploring FreeBSD, straight with FreeBSD. It's a compelling alternative right now with the issues we've had in the PSS.
What do you think about OpenBSD?
From my understanding, a lot of the 10 gig networking and just basically the performance is not there. They're just not there. I've looked at a lot of stuff on it, and unfortunately, I'll say a dirty word, the road Calumel or whatever. Those guys actually have a ton of good information on, like, no, it won't work. It's like it'll work, but not that great. yeah. Yes?
So, is your reason for picking PFSense because it's a virtually supported image, like a client for? Is there some reason that you wanted, say, a feature out of PFSense?
I know that picture.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen this picture. I've seen these boxes. This is actually the star tube. There's a good one for a while. There's stars here.
Where's the light follow up real quick?
So what?
Where's the X?
Right, yes, to cut the wire. So here's the deal. As I'm going through that process, we're trying to figure out where the money comes and goes, we're doing all these things, and we have to focus on our network stack fast, because no matter what we do for network, we don't have the relationships in place to, you know, get any of that gear overnight. How many people have actually ordered a lot of network gear? Okay. And so by the time we've been deployed, we're a growing company with a lot of chaos and a lot of stuff. By the time we get a sign off on this, we could be right on the edge of needing to deploy in like 2 weeks, right? So, you know, for a fact, you aren't getting, yes.
I think it'd be my couple things. The other serious consideration is that if you don't have the skill set to manage straight previously, you don't have the skill set to manage your reporting environment, and you don't have the time and cycles to hire and get on board something, if not enough people to do it.
Yeah.
So you have an alternative. There's the BSD router project, which is made by Oliver, the guy who started PFSense, which is based on 10, I believe 10 stable. It's an image. It's got a command line interface using NetCLI. You could kind of slap it in place of all this. It could use Burr, Quagga, and all the bunch of
things. This is why you just if you have another beer, you just say this really
out. Is that painted? Do you have that name painted anymore?
All right, so you download it now.
Yes,
you
download
it. Okay, this slide, I mean, just for anybody who's not seen this in the room, I'll just say one comment on this. This enabled us to actually start building our network and then prototyping what we were going to do on our desks, right over there, in Ozak Flat. That's pretty important to me, right?
Oh, I think my laptop is going to be, oh, yeah, I'm going to sleep after,
Yeah, that's what I'm actually telling you. So, look, this stuff enabled us to actually get going with putting a network together, understanding what we're going to do, testing our configurations and what we need to accomplish very, very quickly. So did the Graybox kit and being able to load up PFSense on that stuff. We were able, within like 24 hours, to have working full-size prototypes or whatever we were doing in the closet with roughly junk, right? So that's critical. That was critical to us getting here, right? The cost of it on the other side, open source, some open source pains with an interesting product going through its own flux, right?
One more question. So, because what we've set up here is like PFSense 2.1 and 2.2, right?
Yeah.
Are all you are using, like, I think 2.15 is still previously, excuse me, 8.3, okay? 2.2 is using what?
Still 10. 2.2 is their 10 release. Yes.
Okay. It is,
yeah.
Okay.
It's on the verge of being real. Boy, we've got support tickets with them, and we purchased their support, which is very expensive, so we don't complain about its quality, right? Or how fast they come back, et cetera. They're working very hard on getting to 10 because, and they just started selling even these Chelsea cards through their own shop online, right? So they're gunning for this. It's just not quite there yet.
But, okay, so, but is there, is, I don't know, is previous D10 have the update, do they actually do the updated PF for it or not? Or is it still the older PF?
I believe it's all the new PF.
It's
they're going,
PF.
They're gunning everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's why there's so many outstanding bugs and why we evaluated going 2.2 and going with the beta.
Right.
Once we paid for support, which is fast and frankly, like, when we pay you enough support dollars to actually go 2.2, and they're like, no, it's probably not a good idea. What you do.
Just because you're saying, I mean, the IXR was being that 4.8 and all of this stuff going on, it just, it, none of it makes any sense to me right now.
I mean,
it's
I
all
agree.
Like, PF is faster on OpenBSD, but the OpenBSD network stack is slower. 8 is more stable, but it has the old PF, and the networking stack is slower. 10 is great, except, like, you go through the...
It's a really hard moment, I guess. I would call this a hard moment in networking at this point. Seriously, I think it's a hard, I think it's a terrible point. Linux went through this 2009, which happens to be our kernel for the majority of our hosts, or CentOS, that we're personally working on, which is also part of this talk somewhere, if you get it. But yeah, I mean, like, I actually think that, that right now there's a lot of change. I think 10 and 40 gig networking is really radically changing things, right? To, the previous D project with you know, the 10 gig kit, how many years now that they've been working on all the 10 gig stuff and backplane issues and interrupt issues and giant lock being removed is a huge part of that. It's where we're at, you know. And to me, again, I'm not so freaked out by all this because this feels exactly like gigabit networking did to me. And it just does. Awful is what it feels like. Okay, so look, our layer two. So we had all these VLANs, all this insanity before, all this nobody knows which ways, and no real design plan, and a lot of different products, and our application has grown as developers have come and gone, and things have changed, and the product has changed, a lot of chaos. All the segregation with no sanity, right? Nobody in this room has ever seen anything like that before. We decided to flatten our network and focus on organization, right? And our whole team hated that. That sucks. That means that we have to get really detail oriented. We have to plan out all of our net blocks that we're going to use on our internal networks very meticulously. And what we did is we decided we're going to start with an actual layer two internal network that's completely flat and totally connected. Focus on the redundancy and availability. I mean, we literally had all these problems where a single cable was killing the business because our app developers need breathing room to be able to actually get make their application more robust, right? They don't have it if they're constantly responding to a problem that ends up being a bad cable, right? And it's costing the business money. Just not a way to move forward. So high availability, layer two network. These are two switches. These can cover four. We're moving with brocades, we're talking cost, really, was the biggest driver. Cost and they do 10 gig. This is one of the coolest things. We'll share that work real well. 10 gig, RK45 plug Ethernet. It's the bomb. All right, latency is not as good as fiber. This enabled our team to deploy a very straightforward topology using Ethernet, right? Which before we were breaking, screwing up, like our mess, right? It's very difficult to work with. So this stuff, we ended up lagging these two together. Okay, it's got a little fabric thing. Big other point of this though is that we didn't get too engaged or married to the brocade fabric, right? And all vendors try to get out of their layer and start making you buy other stuff. We actually ran into a couple gotchas. If anybody has questions about this, we'll just gloss over it. With QSFP ports, these 40 gig ports, and then shipping a bunch of regular SFPs that are 10 gig fiber optic, but we needed to plug into it, and there's no thing in between that's made by Brocade. Sweet! This sucks. The answer turned into, oh, we have this Hydra. It's a copper cable. It's got a bunch of SFPs on the end, and they totally work with everything except some, there's some stuff. So that stuff ends up being RA10s, which are a load balancer. My boss loves them. I hate them. I have to say that every time I talk about them. But he knows, you know, that the world is right. No boss can ever. You guys like them. Ops team. That Hydra is a gateway into, oh, cool, we've got this firewall product, and this works way better, right? Let me hit that inner connect problem. So yeah, this bust the vendors really hard and ends up being like a $30 sleeve adapter and some big, to basically bust their chops being like, hey, this is IP networking. 10 gig SFP plugs into another 10 gig SFP, they talk a protocol that is open, end story, we'll send them. All these switches back to you right fucking now, guys. Like, and we had to fight that one. It was great. Then we found the $30 fleet. So the ports here are 10 gig ports. The auto selects, they're just the light ports you'd think they would be. We have no problems with them. We have connected with a couple of those copper connectors, or switches and key points, but we try to focus on not using those as much as possible, so we have as few specialized cables as possible, and it's all Ethernet coming out of your Ethernet, right? Cheap, always available. Data center, you can always go to a guy and say, hey, do you have an Ethernet cable this long? You can't go, hey, do you have that copper thing with SFPs? Doesn't work. So from there, our core, being these kind of 10 gig racks, it's exactly pretty much the same hardware, different model number, that we deployed to our top of rack switch one or whatever. I guess it would be how you describe this. We don't put them at the top. This layer they've only got a few 10 gig ports based on licensing, and they're a third of the cost. Great, and the rest is gigabit. So that's important because the racks are where we're actually growing, right? So this distribution where we have, they use a thing called Trill instead of spanning tree. It's all pretty kind of buttoned up and very magically nice to work with, et cetera. And the, thanks. Yeah, it's working great, I swear. It was awesome. So look, basically this enables us to create this topology where we can make two types of switch that are really the same physical thing. We narrowed it down from the gazillions of different switches we had, and we narrowed this down to the exact same config for all of our top rack switches and for these fat, what we call core switches in our world. Two types of config, the only thing that's different on each switch is a unique identifier, so we can use trill dance nicely. And that's it. This meant that we can deploy all of this stuff in our new facility incredibly quickly. And we all on our team know that the first bank ports on this side can all be used as, you know, flag uplinks, or they can be switch ports, and it will just work, right? And that's our flat network. No VLANs, no nothing like that. So, and we can have 10 gig racks should we need them. We have not come to a case yet where this is reality for any of our applications. This is desire, right? Alright, so that suddenly means that our entire network, from all this crazy stuff that we were doing before, we've got three different pieces of hardware that it takes to build our whole network. And we're having problems with this one, right? We can swap this one thing out. We don't have to screw with layer two, layer three being all commingled in some crazy mash, right? So from there, this is what we started with, our A10 load balancers behind these guys. Quick note for you. So as we hit the summer and our move, we had done all this due diligence and all this work. We had interns on the staff then. Our team was a little bigger even. And at that point, our boss had a vacation that had been planned since before he joined the company to fly an airplane across Australia. Ask him about it. He flies planes. Anyway, for a month. And that was in the middle of this process. And as this was going on, we were also going through, as many startups are, a lot of the changes in our development team, our engineers, turnover, new people coming and going, all kinds of things were happening. And I was left at the helm. Unfortunately, my teammates are still not talking to me. It's fine. We'll get over it together, guys. With all that stated, the part that we had come through and that JB was able to carry us through together was getting New Jersey lit. We had base connectivity, everything on, and it was time to start moving the application in phases. And we had planned this out quite meticulously. This has to move first, and then this is dependency. We have a number of boxes that we were starting in that were brand new, so we could hermit crab this whole thing over across the river. And during that process, the business also was aggressively going after new products. And there's a pretty serious disconnect. So I got left at the helm with no action, right? Yeah, your data center's done. You guys did great. It's up and running. No, there's no, our application's not in it. We have to move that. Engineering team, dev team, let's go. And so with that, we had to do some serious wrestling with the team to get these things prioritized and get the move to happen. This is just part of our process of what happened. In the meantime, there were other issues that our database team could talk about that were amazing and have to do with this fantastic and interesting technology called MongoDB, which our database team will tell you all about sometime. Perhaps once we've done more exposures. the gist of this was all of these projects came together in epic outages, epic application problems, and not much of it was actually the data center moved with the plan, but it was a big part of that time period. And what was distracting the development team from focusing on what they needed to, what the business needed, what thought they needed to go to. So, anyways, in that meantime, we had, from the Carp routers, we had the A10 guy, one of the guys from the company come and help set them up and do this, and they're kind of black boxy and they work real well. Great. We set it all up with bridged interfaces out the front door so that they had their internet connectivity bridge with a transparent bridge to TSS boxes. Yeah, Carp and bridges, right? So, MAC addresses passing through bridge. Packets not knowing which way to actually come or go because that MAC address is being bridged through these two devices. You get into basically a very, very odd sort of, oh shit, we can't do that. So we realized this after we had initially lit them and it seemed to work great, but we were actually spewing duplicating packets, since or whatever, the cart, guessing. We're actually maintaining the state of the packets, which was part of this. Anyways, badness. In a huff, very quickly said, aha, quick solution. Okay, let's turn this into a routed configuration. Done. And lock in. Yes?
Let's be clear. This happened because you did a traffic surge when it happened in the best way.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, we actually did take a very small PDF.
Yes. Oh, no, I was going to get to that. Yeah. Yeah, at this point we're starting to move the application live, yes. And the decision in the changing the rabbit config was done in haste while I was, while my boss was gone, and our team was stretched real thin while we're wrestling to get the application across the river with the teams. So, okay, cool, it's rabbit, it's good, it's all done, yay. And yes, we had this huge surge of traffic when we're running fast that affected our customers and made their traffic and ours spike. And at the same time, we're hit with a minuscule SIM flood attack. How was the last time anybody had to deal with the pain of a SIM flood attack? Not like years, right? It's all problems. Easy. No, not. It was not for us because what we were doing, the SIM flood was actually, this has been put together as a chase. They were consuming all of the possible states in our firewall, as well as making it flat as all of those states were being synchronized between hosts, as well as basically creating a scenario where, this was a really bad time, creating a scenario where mitigating the SIM flood meant that we weren't able to actually handle correct TCP and HTTP exchange at our load balancers. If we were to do SIM proxying in the front door, we would actually, we'd put a lot of pain. Try to fix this in an epic event. If we tried to send proxy at the front door, we would start blowing away our load balancers with the totally, we're done with the, you know, SynAct Exchange here, replay. That wouldn't work. So we went to another plan in a hub. And during the move, that's covered in the slide up here. We had planned for this. Hey, one day we'll just take the load balancers out of their own egress, their own internet connections, and be great. Right? And they're totally separate. That problem is totally separate from the rest of our network traffic, which ended up being a good move. And what we, the only bad part of it is that this was all done in the middle of the night. So this comes back to having a really good relationship with your data center, your vendors, people treating them well, making sure that they treat you well, like bust their balls when they're really needed, but rest of the time treat them well. So our provider within 2 hours had a totally equal gigabit ports provisioned for us as we were driving out to New Jersey to fix this. And we were able to use the failover config of our front door boxes to very quickly, with about 3 seconds of downtime, we switched between the hosts and then pulled the egress into these other ports, pulled fiber. We were able to do this with, what was it about? That was at least nice. It was about 30 seconds of downtime, less. We didn't feel that success because we were fucked, but, you know. So from there, that gave us an opportunity, all right, let's bring in another 10 gig line, and this was our plan anyways as we grew, so we'll just accelerate that plan. Part of the thing that I want to talk about that's important about what we did plan that was successful in this is that we planned for this, right? And part of the plan was to keep all of the layers as segregated as possible so that if the need arose, this was one layer we were working with, not gazillion layers, not routing, not VLANs, not any kind of hijinks that would go all the way up to the hosts, right? This was working with one thing in one place. And some of this sounds just like boring and like, you know, I know a lot of you group, and I know you guys build things that are wonderful. And I also know that a lot of this is just how we do things in BSD land, right? But as you can see from the slides, this is not how a lot of the world does things, right? And you end up having to make crazy decisions because some change up here is going to affect all of your hosts in some bizarre way. Make sense? Questions, thoughts, comments, things you should have done better?
Sorry, I didn't understand how you segmented the network though. What were you segmenting?
HTTP traffic, yeah. All of our HTTP traffic from the rest of our the mail traffic, from the rest of our application that reaches out and talks to all these APIs in the world.
Okay.
From a lot of other egress.
So it meant that you weren't doing the load balancing on the HTTP network, which meant that you could do SYN proxy on that one.
Yeah. That's just built in the front as security, as DDoS protection checkbox.
As long as you have too many
SYN proxy and all kinds of other SYN tools in a kind of a black boxy way.
Right. Yeah, so you're now real network and everything else. Right.
We could have solved this with the BSF. We could have solved this with the transparent bridge in between. Right? But I'm glad we didn't, because now we're facing the thoroughbred problems, which, you know, at this point it's pretty clear might have been part
of
the fact.
Is there transparent bridging supporting PSS 2.2? Or is that a...
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Just
one.
Because it's getting complicated.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know. But does this simplify things greatly? We know how this works. We know how this works. They're not touching it. It's great. It's fun. Okay, so this also means that other things, and we're about to actually pull apart even further, we have some dipset tunnels on these that go to AWS, has anybody worked with those? They're like VPN thing machine. Yeah, it's pretty sucky. It's pretty unfun. Been a lot of whatever. We're pulling that off onto separate hardware tomorrow. As we're dealing with trying to isolate our problems here. It's the last kind of co-mingled concept in these edit boxes. Right? I think I glossed over a whole bunch of stuff here. That's okay. BGB, hijinks, multi-LAN, that's another universe for us right now. We did these things. We had our IPsec VPN to another facility, AWS IPsec to another facility. You know, really, I could share one lesson from this. We did this because it's the fastest thing we could possibly do. Light up
the VPN tunnels on these DSS boxes, or you can light them up on a BSD box, you can light them up on anything. The extra complication, really not worth it. Really not worth it. At this point, the most stable thing we've got going in our world is OpenVPN running very simple configs on separate hardware, right, outside of our world. It's really treating us nice. And that's about all I have to say on that. The more stuff you gang up on your, whatever your important egress points are, the more complicated it is to solve any problem that arises. Right. Thoughts, questions, comments? Yeah. Here's just notes on some other stuff we did in prepping for this. So we had all this internal conversation about how we're going to solve the network problems. There was this incredible amount of pressure from the development organization, from our engineering colleagues, on the fact that they were having, here's one of them showing up, they were having possibly the scariest, most out-of-control experience of their application development life in the world. It really broke my heart. Like seeing all this at the beginning, because they couldn't see straight. Traceroute didn't mean shit. Think about that. Yeah, like you're writing a network application and doing all this stuff with Memcache and trying to use Memcache to increase the performance of some data store or something. I didn't even know what you're doing. It didn't. It was really painful. So we did a lot of work and spent a lot of time with our development team. And some of these slides are from presenting to them, asking for input. And asking, hey, how do I know from one rack to the next, what's that going to be like? Like, we have this problem now. This is awful. You don't trust in us. And that was fair, right? And we said, oh, great. So let's do the model. And now we came up with a deterministic. We have three physical devices that are this deterministic number of physical hops most of the time. And some of the time, there's little numbers that you probably can't see here, but we're counting the hops. If this fails, one, two, three, four, maybe five, right? Physical hops out to a host, right? So these are our top of rack switches, these are the core switches, right? And the host part was pretty easy. That's, you know, Linux bonding, you can find docs on it. If you can't, email me. I'll get back to you in about 6 months. And FreeBSD's lag, of course, or OpenBSD's lag, or any lag. And we did that in the failover config. So what this did was we had to really put some pressure, the team put some really deserved pressure on our team, even though it was really hard to cope with as we're trying to do all this stuff. To really do our homework and figure out for them, how are we going to get past this, right? How are we going to grow? How is this going to not suck? And then we did designs with like 40 gig trunks and all of this crazy stuff, big money. And we said, yeah, it could be this awesome. And we did the numbers on what it's going to cost and that. Conversation, right? We figured out. We'll define what we got. We also did a lot of planning for how we're going to lay out our topology. This kind of begins with stuff we'll get some pictures on. In advance, this looks stupid to do in advance, but the more planning you put into what's going into the racks, how many you got, the less boneheaded, oh my god, I'm standing in the middle of the data center, and I don't have enough ports to plug all the hosts that we've got into this rack. And if you do the OCD diagram and you put a bunch of wires connected to all the things and you can count it right there, you just save yourself $1 million, right? So visually, I think this diagramming is worth a lot to anybody, right? The more we do, oh, and by the way, none of this is exactly how it all came out, right? But was it like Dwight Eisenhower, something about...
plans are essential, plans useless.
Yeah, plans are essential and plans are useless. Like, It's really important to do all your planning up front, do as much planning as you can afford up front. And that includes financial planning. So we have these spreadsheets that some people have seen and have mutated over the years, like a copy of it. We had an intern this summer who put a lot of work in, and this winter I hope we get her back around to cleaning it up, maybe publishing it, putting it in a repunch on some whatever flip hub or whatever code goes these days. What we did is we take and care about two things. We talk about this with our database team all the time. Hey, we've got these MongoDB servers, and the amount of memory we put in them is way outside of the price curve. They're absurdly expensive, and if we just could put them in smaller boxes, we'd be great. And then we go too small, and we go great. We don't know how we'd have enough plugs in. Like, we have to double our monthly cost commit in getting extra circuits from our data center to plug that many things in, and the actual power consumption goes through the roof, which is our biggest monthly recurring cost.
at the data center. That's about 70% of what you're paying for. It's your power. So the spreadsheets we use to basically figure out our per rack usage of power and how much everything costs per rack, right? And we can start ballparking where we're going with all this and start making cogent engineering decisions based on like facts, reality, what we're trying to do with it. And some of these spreadsheets get pretty advanced. Especially our intern this summer, who's great. They get pretty advanced in figuring out your monthly recurring cost in the future and to help you do the financial analysis for like how your business actually spends money, right? So if it's cheaper to make $750,000 CapEx because it's going to save you from $6 million of expenditure in the next 2 years, that could be really valuable, right? The business should be able to make a decision, not us on the floor winging it. That's me. So these are just more OCD. You just diagram the heck out of everything you're doing and try it. And the diagrams will also show you real quick because they take too long to make if you're getting too complicated. That's another nice thing about it. This color, it's that color, they're all different. They're all, okay. Let's wipe this. Let's make it. Another teammate just left the room. Mike, you're using too many colors on the whiteboard. blah, blah, blah. Network. We've talked about all this. Time to deploy considerations. All right, we'll get to this in a second with some pictures. We had a very short period of time. How many months did we have? 1.5? Do we have 2 full months?
2 units deployed.
Yeah. The power turned on in our cabinets. Yeah, we had a very short amount of time, like 10 cabinets, and a bunch of brand spanking new hardware that we've never touched before, start moving all this old hardware that most of our team had never touched before. So we had to move fast, and so this means that we have to kind of bastardize everything we're doing into a system that we can all do. And so some of that, what was I going to say? Oh, this is a discussion about VLANs, which I'll just gloss over. Something else to come back to later. What we ended up doing, we organized everything. Oops, this is the organizing our IP layer for later slide. I'm going to go to pictures now, so get through all that. So what we ended up doing with the cabling, for example, and with the rest of the racks, is we created, trying to find the most uniform looking picture of the new world. All right, this is our new world. This is one shot of it. There's a couple pictures with, there's the cable. There's some of the fine work. So this looks like super OCD, like some dude went in, like me, and was like, yes, that's pretty. I think it is pretty, but it wasn't designed to be pretty, right? This whole thing is like we came up with as a team. I showed the boundaries, throw it, and then we modified it and made it happen. We came up with this thing as a team. We really did. We said, okay, cool. Every power cable, here's our algorithm, or here's our rule set for how we deploy everything. Every power cable goes behind every Ethernet cable, period. This enables us to tuck them all to the side, and this means that any electromagnetic interference is at least pretty uniform across all of our universe, right? If anything. We've also got a bunch of boxes, power on one side, power on the other side. We don't know, like, it's a lot of difference eventually. These are some of the new boxes that came in. And we've got like fun surprises, like, oh yeah, these all have double fuel power supplies. The better to ship that we don't do that. Our application model's not like that. Every cabinet will be just like this when we order it. We will have 2 primary circuits, not AB power, right? If anybody wants to talk about that stuff later, we're wrestling this thing to try and smoothly it and give you that great low price and then come back to you later when you're using the amps. Let's talk about it. But every cabinet will have 2 circuits. They will all be, in our world, 30 amps. They will all, everything from one universe to the next right now, and we decided to keep this locked down for 18 solid months. We will not change this plan. Even if it turns out to not be a perfect plan, we won't change it every time. And now all we're using the cable top, and we get these cable managers in between, we put all the cables in the middle, which means that for every cabinet, we can order a set number of 5, 7, and 3-foot cables, and we know that when we have one cabinet, we need roughly this many cables, and we get 30% more than that. cables are really cheap. But we don't want a scenario where we have to, you know, hijink, you know, those hijinks with like two, you know, two things that are next to each other, and you got a 25-foot cable dangling off there, or vice versa. Like, our switch is up there, the server equipment is down there, and we've got no more long cables, right? So try to make a system out of this that's flexible enough to be deal with our chaos, right? And we also used to have massive heat problems because all cables were all in the back. We had boxes bouncing because they were just literally too hot, right? Waterfalls, cabling coming off switches, and all kinds of all manner of evil. So the airflow becomes real bad. All of you came there. So these cabinets were done. One of them was done. I'm going to use our intern as an example. He'd never walked into a data center before, and on his second day, one of these is his. I don't know which one it was. It was a kid by his background, right? So he didn't come up with this. So this system works. We deploy a lot more cabinets. None of us have done it the same, and it all works the same. We use these trays in the middle because if you just plug all the cabling in, and then take all the loose, after you plug into the switch, you can start pixie booting it right there, start, you know, provisioning the server, turning it on. And when you're done, you just take a whole batch of this, coil it, stick it in, done. Need to service it, take out the coil, put it back in. That's what we did, and it works. I'm not saying this will work everywhere, but for the space we keep, this is what we did. Yes, Mark?
Silly question.
But yes.
Somewhat important. Why the colors of the cables? Because I see some blue.
Blue. Yeah, we can take some liberties with, like, well, that'll make this easier. All right, so there's some other things
like really
that
are kind
of ad hoc in it.
Contrast there.
So we have two switches in every cabinet. There's one on the top, there's one below this.
Yeah, I get that.
So red and yellow makes it pretty easy to spot them.
Yeah.
Roughly. Hey. The hiring and making it to change it would make it better.
One darker than the other.
One darker than the other.
Yeah. It's easier to see.
So this is the shit we had to put up with as a team when we were trying to put this together. I'll take it to the board. The blue one's coming down. So the Cat's, the 10 gig, they make Cat 6A. It's really nice. I've got one on my desk at the die to cut open. We can all do that for me if you want to see what's inside. It's got some kind of heavy shielding.
Yeah.
It's real. It's way thicker than Cat 6. It's got kind of a ribbing on it. Yeah, it's a different spec. And it's 410 gig. Ethernet. First time I've touched it, it's fun. And so that stuff all just comes in blue from the vendor we bought it from. That was it, right? So, okay, all we have to say is blue.
That's the pink on the cables.
yes. The orange ones in our world are all crossover cables, which you don't technically actually need really many places, but I'm pretty anywhere, old school. So we've got some embedded boards in other places, and we've got some other gear, some of our older gear. Yeah, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Anyways, we've got a lot of them. They're always getting used. So what this meant is that we could roll this whole sucker out, and I'm going to just flip through pictures of that stuff. We could do the physical really fast. So this is what our team did while our entire company was at the beach for the company beach day. Startups do all kinds of fun stuff, totally fun stuff. And if you're in ops, or you do systems, and you join a startup, you won't be doing any of that fun stuff for a while. All right? And we're really looking forward to this winter to be over so we can go get drunk with the rest of the company. But yeah, so this was our beach day. Let me see here. Let me flip through. Yeah, building it out. This is what the front looks like. These are actually, I mean, this is one phase of the build. These are some embedded systems that are the PC Engine's, not Alex.
APU,
thank you. Yeah, these are APU boards. These end up being a kind of a network infrastructure that are our network infrastructure, right? They're not sexy boxes. Nobody wants to use them. No dev in our shop would ever want to use such a small box, right? So these things don't become we will always have two of them. They will always be there so that we can do critical things with our infrastructure from the outside. They will just always be there because they are the odd lot thing, right? And they're pretty beefy. Like, we put out SATA cards in them, it's like 512 gigs of storage. It's like a real computer. That stuff was, you know, 6U, So yeah, anyway, that worked out real, those things work out real well as little things. And we're thinking of taking the rest of our SSH shell hosts to that kind of stuff later so that we can take the big box and use it for big things, right? We'll get to that. One other thing to remove is worth noting. We have to make a lot of concessions and get over a lot of conceived ideas about what we needed to accomplish and figure out what was really important. There are boxes, I think, right down here, I think. One of them is serving one of the internal DNS services, and it's got 64 gigs of memory. It's currently serving DNS right this second. And boy, it pained me to do that, but you know, when we needed the DNS server as part of the move, that was the server that was actually available to do the job, right? So there's this line here where, don't want to get sloppy, but you also got to let go of a lot of things. And at this point now, we have two other boxes. A lot's happened since this picture was taken. And we've got some little teeny boxes elsewhere that we've now recovered from the old data center, just waiting for us to get around to dropping them up and freeing those up to go be application servers to the rail heads and somewhere else, right? But during the process, you really have to keep that stuff organized, right? Because that can spin out of control. And right now, we still have our arms around that stuff, right? Oh, thank goodness. Enough of that, et cetera. Okay, so this is a really stupid one. Kyle's not in the room, it's a shame. This is one of our teammates. This was the first full cabinet, right, as we were doing our build out. And it's a mix of servers that had been moved in, new servers, et cetera. I can't stress enough how great it was to take this picture and to get to this moment together. All the way through this process, like this is grueling. We all yelled at each other. Our team is actually really tight right now because we just went through this kind of epic thing together and succeeded. Along the way, if you don't stop and take this picture, the team ain't gonna make it. You just aren't, all right? This picture went on the company internal blog and got much cheering, of course, too, right? But like this stuff, as much as we don't think, I don't think about this stuff all the time, is critical, actually, right? And stuff like this. So this is a like keel plate for shipbuilding. We have a sail through. We have all the ship stuff and kind of goofy. Everybody's got a theme, right? This has been signed by everybody who had a serious hand in making this entire thing happen, including our head of legal. Let me see. Our CFO is somewhere in here. Signing some of the checks that, and signing some of the paperwork that we just have him sign. And for trusting us, right? Hey, here's this thing, it's going to cost me this much over the next 3 years if that's the best deal we've got. Right? That kind of thing. These things are important, is basically the point of that slide. Alright, so we went to the end of all those, and we glossed over a lot of other stuff. Data center planning. Does anybody have questions? You've been around data centers a lot. There's, you know, more than one. You know, like, or one a lot. How about that? Okay, sure. So data center planning, I could go on and on and on and on about what to look for when you're dealing with data centers. At the end of the day, it really comes down to busting their balls to not let them rope you on giving you the wrong bill, right? A cheap bill. They want those numbers to look good, and you may not have, in particular, the power you need or other things in place. Second is planning for expansion in reality and getting the costs right. So this is what we started with these 10 cabinets. We've got two more that we're going to see tomorrow that we haven't seen yet. We're already starting to build out into this phase two of more space. And we've got a facility to give us right of first refusal on the cabinet next to us for, you know, the future. Will we get there? Thanks for coming. Will we get there? I don't know. Is doing all this stuff and getting to this big size actually what's really important to the business or to us? We don't know. You know, like actually maybe getting our application in shape where we use a lot less resources would be better for us. That doesn't matter. Getting the stuff in place is what's important. Being able to expand sanely without killing your business and without having some, you know, ISP sell you into a data center that's going to close soon, for example. All right. Yeah, internet. Maybe. Anyway, where else does this talk go? I had stuff, other things that I wanted to cover. I'll just run through to the end bit and then open this up for questions about networks and stuff. Tech, yeah, we covered some pieces. Team coordination, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah! Okay, so more on planning. And then I'll stop with all the boring parts. Because some of this stuff, really, like, I like doing engineering work, not, you know, administrative. And I certainly also like doing my boss's job. Found that out, so. So, team coordination and planning. Company like ours, startup, how many people have like a planning, a ticketing system, something that they use for, you know, emergency response work? How many people have some kind of project management software that they have to interact with? I finished this unit of work that the business wants me to do.
I think more than one.
Yeah, cool. You guys are ready to start up too. Yeah, we have more than one as well.
Yeah,
we have one, and we have development teams that are let loose to introduce their own systems for managing their work as well. Now, as much as our folks like this stuff, this is something that's really common in every startup, and it can make planning this process a kind of an absolute nightmare. Which system do we use? What's canonical for the other teams so we can understand how we're impacting them? No idea. Again, paper and a notebook like this and lots of notes become pretty much the only way to start navigating that. And second, a preparedness to both do a lot of sloppy work in some system that sucks for somebody else and the ability to take all that work you did, we planned it. This entire, all the application swings were planned very meticulously in fog runners, crappy tool. Really painful to work it. And by the time you ever hit the road, we never looked at that. The entire remainder of the data center move from the application perspective was done with Google Docs every day that changed. Like we're due for every day, every small unit of work. It was excruciating. So the ability to let go and the ability to figure out how to make all of that noise and nonsense work for you is actually another part of making this kind of stuff happen, right? And making it successful. But at the end of the day, the easiest override for all of it is paper. That's my last like organizational, like that was important, that got us there. Here we are, and here's pretty much the end of the talk, and I'd love to answer questions about the network or pieces that are not well described in here. You know, pretty much the last thing is here we are, we finished the move. Our team's exhausted, we're heading into our busiest season of the year, and yeah, just popping. The, yeah, thank you. The, we're heading into our busiest season of the year. A lot of new and exciting and untested, some of it, and some of it very well worn paths. Some things are stable in our world, some things are not. We're positioned pretty well, but we're alive. And so that's pretty much what this whole presentation was about, is how to make all of that happen in a very short amount of time and get through it. At the end of the day, what the future is going to bring, what our winner is going to bring, we don't know. We're going to find out. And that's that. Questions, thoughts on it? Yeah.
Do you weigh with VLANs at all, or?
Yeah, altogether. So there's not any part of our universe right now that's VLANs. I think I passed the slide in there.
Yeah.
I passed the slide in there.
Are you not using VLANs at all?
Well, so here's the deal. There's two parts to the process that make things hard. Yeah, here it is. VLANs. So we have this problem. We had a problem with our VLANs, and in this star topology of network, right? The topology that we had this from a physical and from a logical or physical perspective, deterministic, right? The number of hops between servers in this cabinet and servers in that cabinet, we can make it to deterministic tolerances that are nothing like our Hellman before. Cool. Now we get to a scenario where if we're VLANing across this. One thing is, that means we actually have to have some kind of console that's remotely accessible to our switches, which currently we do not. We put the USB stick in that we pre-made config for switch, we run it, we unplug it. It works. Like, that's where we're at right now, almost like unmanaged switching.
Do you have a problem with low-end, like, data center too?
Sir, what?
Do you have a problem with low-end data center to kind of man those switches, right?
Let me see. So the one thing we have done when we were troubleshooting other network problems as this thing was coming up live was to not have a goblin, but we did take the serial cables and plug them into a bunch of hosts temporarily, right? And we found, okay, cool, the problem's not here, unplug all those, right? So our intention right now is not to manage that layer 2 at all.
So you don't have remote management on switches?
No, we do not. So right now, if the switch actually fails, we'll pick up the failure on our hosts. We'll understand, like, hey, switch, something's really bad with the switch. And at that point, we'll just put it in our maintenance roster. Okay, next time we're on site, one of our switches is bad. Hey, maybe we'll even be in a position where we'll be forced to drop lag on all our hosts on that side. But we're not in a position right now. Basically, the failure becomes something that, because there are two in every cabinet with redundancy all the way through to each host, this is not like a problem with the switch. It's not a we have to drop everything and fix it now.
What's like ballpark count of hosts on that whole network?
Ballpark count of hosts, hardware hosts. Yes? Better get it right because the business lasted this in 2 weeks.
166.
Is that real? That's real?
Yeah.
Feels like. God, it all was so much work. It feels like that number's so much bigger. Right.
So you have your switching cables, like, all over the place. Like, all the switches have all the global posts.
They all have what?
All the switches keep all the posts and all the
data. It is one flat layer 2. Yes, that is correct. We know that we will hit limits on that. If we hit them in the next 18 months, we'd all be surprised.
Most of the traffic route, if it was in the
yes.
So you don't
have
multicast floating around and don't convert this?
Nah.
LLD?
Nah.
Nah. So...
it's really pretty quiet.
Other than those switches and learning the learning ports.
Oh, they're really delightful. Once we get some more time to actually play with them, because at this point, like, the only attention we've paid to them is, are you broken? You're not? You're not even sweating? Okay, cool. We're not working on it.
Would you say they're brocaded?
Brocaded. Yeah, brocaded.
Ballpark figure. What's close for the MG1? 48 ports?
Yeah, according to some vendors, it's really for the ship. These guys, the big 10 gigs all the way across, every single port, 20,000 hertz. When you think about it, we priced this out next to Juniper's, the incumbent, and we're looking at 48 ports. Yeah. 48 ports. Pricing it out next to
Juniper was more expensive.
Much. The same port count. Yeah, for 10 gig ports across all of the, for 10 gig ports across 48 port switch, being able to actually carry the throughput. Yeah. Yeah.
Are they,
maybe we got a better render than we had, but.
Yeah,
we're good. If you're using 10 gig Ethernet, which I think is more expensive than like TwinAx,
for
the switches.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Well, it is, and it's also not well worn territory, like the brocade stuffs. They've got a lot more than everybody else. Maybe it's a peer group. Excuse me, maybe it's a system. But anyway, these guys end up, the smaller guys end up being, what, 7? Something like that? Yeah. They're still really expensive. If we didn't have our requirements, I'd do it cheaper.
So does it take engineers?
So far, we've got a boatload of SPs from all the former gear and all the stuff. Popped a few in to screw around, and yeah, so far, we've got a link light.
Living with that, I can't tell you.
But I know from experience, dealing for a Lux, you have a Lux game.
Really hard, yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah, I got a bunch of four data for third party ones. Yeah.
I'm curious, you basically went from a 1 gig network to a 10 gig network. Now, just to find that.
Can I actually clarify that real quick?
Yeah.
Still 1 gig at all of our hosts. Still 1 gig at all of our racks, right? That's predominantly 1 gig. There's really no 10 gig use in our racks, right?
Okay.
10 gig is when it interconnects between all of the racks, right? So.
Got it.
Yeah, so we're not there.
Okay, I thought you actually went lower down.
We have the ability to do that without too much fuss right now, because that's something that in the next 18 months the business said you want to be able to do. But do we think we're going to do it? Obviously.
I mean, it's back to the days of like, oh, we have 10 meg hubs and our core switch is 100 meg.
Right.
Understood.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same pattern.
Yes, a whole.
Yeah. But then in the rest, oh yeah.
What's the reported number on the switching capacity?
It has been precisely 5 months since I've looked at any of that. I will happily email it to you. Fast? Good? I'm sorry to, once we've solved the problem, we were going in such a cliff that it's a bit like, cool, that's just done. Right. Great, I've got it. Yeah, I actually know a lot more about the thing that's hurting us right now than I do the thing that's awesome.
Sure.
Unfortunately. Another question.
So, like, with these switches, do they vendor claim that they are all like each port in the library, or are they saying like our switch has so much aggregate throughput and you shouldn't exceed X amount of throughput per port group?
Yes, it's aggregate throughput per port group, and they give you a diagram that shows like these ports are all the first port group, and these are the second, and these are the third. Here's a few ports like that. So it's broken apart.
Right, so do you call it service, or are you doing any sort of like,
no.
So you could have like one faction client kind of piss off everybody else in one port group by overextending the amount
of good. So we thought that was happening. That was a part of the theory of testing something that ended up being largely application-based. And this is what prompted us to go into your facility, put a bunch of plug-in security cables all around. We're not collecting right now. We're not in that position. We're not in a position where we're even thinking about it.
The broken are static. You're not modular, right? You can't like pull out a bunch of.
These are static, totally static. Yes.
And they're not.
Except for the power supply, I guess. Yeah.
They're not like converters. You can't like stick fiber channel out one end and.
No.
And it off and stick it onto a fiber channel switch somewhere.
Nope. And on top of it, I mean, you could with these QSFP ports, the 40 gig ports, do things with that to do something along those lines, but no. And on top of it, hold on one second, I'll hit you with it. On top of it, the hardware is identical, like the guts between the cheaper switch and the more expensive switch, even though they have a different model number printed on the front, are so identical that we can upgrade any of the slower rate switches with a license, right? And we just find that, I find that totally comical.
Right,
that's how they've done it.
So, there's no access list, there's no VLAN tagging, you have a giant network.
Yeah.
Manage.
Yeah. So, you had a comment? Let me just walk through this one quick number of slides because I think it'll answer some questions on why this crazy design. I totally see why everybody's like, oh, this is nuts. First off, our application focus right now is layer 7 still. And so a lot of those concessions, a lot of not doing this, were all based around, we have this problem solved, and those aren't anything that's going to help us with that problem right now. Right? When we get to it, we'll certainly address it, but engage it. But, so here's the deal. If we're going to VLAN, say, between cabinets, here's a bunch of stuff that's in VLAN 10, which is an app, let's say that's an application layer, VLAN, right? So we've got a bunch of app servers, and these are a bunch of database servers, and they're in another VLAN, right? And they happen to physically reside in that cabinet. Okay, so between application layer, between these application servers and the database, we still have this deterministic number of between 3 and 1 hops most of the time, right? Physically. Yay, everything's all fast and awesome. We hit this point where if they're in the same VLAN, this is fast. And really, we have to watch out for top rack interconnect bandwidth, but
or, I mean, the whatever's connecting us. Now, if we could do our VLANs for, you know, server VLANs for routers and do all this classic stuff without getting too deep into even configuring a lot of the VLAN stuff out at the switches. Cool, that's easy enough. And we have ports that truck out to VLAN law cabinets and VLAN other cabinets. Cool, we can organize this. Next thing that happens is, okay, cool. These app servers, they want to get to this database server. Cool. So here we go, up through the firewall, up the front door, through the highest pressure point of egress in our world in this design, right? There's other designs. I'm not saying this is the ultimate design thing, but in our design so far, they're going to be passing two packets through the firewall up here. And next thing we know, we now have a scenario where, let me see, when we're segregating these relays, we have one, two, three, we suddenly back to an interestingly non-deterministic number of, we've just changed our numbers in our deterministic number of hops between devices. We actually physically pass back the same packet through this switch twice. Physically. This was a problem with playing this before. And this becomes a heavy pressure bottleneck. Right up at the edge, which thank God we didn't do this right now with the problems we're dealing with. Yeah, we'd be pretty frankly fucked, yeah. Or we might have been fucked before it went live, so then it could have been better. this is like the most common case for what we want the VLANs for, right? Segregating different application layers, right? App layer, database layer, right? So this is where this topology for us and what we did with this topology. Like the VLANs suck. So this problem really sucks. We don't like this, and we thought, hey, there's a solution. We've been buying these newer PFSense boxes for PFSense with four gigabit ports. It's about $3,000 a pop to do them. And why make a VLAN when you can make a LAN? Like, if these continue to become cheap for us, we continue to make this model work with this inexpensive hardware, like, just take those racks, put a router in front of one of them, and ta-da, it's in its own segregated network. Maybe distribute to a couple of racks.
So if you're talking about the app servers and the database servers now,
yeah.
Are those 3K boxes, are they actually doing any packet filtering?
Yeah.
So it's another internal network.
Yeah.
Segmented.
Yeah, because our real model is customer, which will remain unnamed, coming in doing a huge probe and saying, wow, we want this kind of level of audit and your data layer can't talk to your app layer. Or, surprisingly, something we've actually been dealing with that's interesting to us, hey, we have some really, really, can't say what they are because it's internal to business, we have some really absurd requirements for you guys, but we think they're not absurd. And these parts of your application can never actually do this and that and the other and blah, 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 and we totally won't sign on the dotted line until you do that. Like, we're at a point where the idea of actually having a firewall and having actual networks.
Why do you have to go all the way up to the egress level?
That was the old way.
So,
is that the only
that's
place for the wrong egress?
On our network, yes, because in this model, we're not doing any routing in our switching layer at all. No layer 3 is anything. Everything's layer 2 in our switching layer, period. This was another thing. So some of these choices were also these. So another thing about startups, fun stuff. Let's turn this off. Can you turn this off?
Yeah.
Hey. Thanks. Yay.